Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we have big time Tiger updates from some very interesting conversation. But more importantly, I hit a big winner on the PGA Tour. We get into all that, plus the drama at Riviera, and some more drama with Phil Mickelson going ballistic on the PGA Tour as the Saudi rumor pot is boiling or maybe even crumbling. Who knows? Plus, we're tuned into a friend in a new movie and a new series as well. This week's guest, really cool find and business network from the PGA Show, and Peter Ashley from Kava Mobile, plus everything we're tuned into with the NFL and NBA, and we always end with food, all brought to you by our friends at Club Dr. Golf. Mike just played last weekend, and I can't stress this enough, the range routine of just hitting the club and then spraying the Club Dr. spray, cleaning off your clubs while you warm up. It's a tried and true thing, and I love adding it to my pregame routine. So you should too. Club Dr. Golf is the number one golf club care solution. Like I mentioned, they've got the spray, which I love using on the go, but they also have the polish. You want to sit down, have a nice little club cleaning session, take an extra few minutes to restore the shine of the club face, making it look brand new, then you need Club Dr. in your life. So check out clubdrgolf.com. Use our promo code COL for 15% off. That's COL. For 15% off any purchase at clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, Club Dr. Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a lot of fun out there at the Pacific Palisades for the Genesis Invitational, the tournament hosted by the one and only Tiger Woods. And included in this tournament also was almost every single golfer with the name Cameron. And they all made the cut. And I really feel like this is the lead story that we need to be talking about.
Okay, so wait, I'm putting myself on the spot here. We didn't talk about this earlier. So we had Cameron Young, had an amazing finish. Yep. Okay.
He did.
Let's see, Cameron Tringali, I'm guessing, yes. Probably made the cut.
Yes.
Cameron Champ, the Australian. Yep. And then, Hold on, I got it. Cameron Davis. Yep. As well, too. Am I missing any Camerons here?
You are missing another Cameron. You're missing the other Australian, Cameron Smith.
Oh, man. The one who's probably ranked the highest, too, of all things. So
yes.
4-5. Yes. Not bad. But regardless, Cameron's really flooding the leaderboard there at the Riv.
It really was. And, of course, so they stole the show. But let's talk about everyone else who played there. In particular, let's talk about someone who we've been maybe trailing for a while here. I think last season you were on him hot. And finally, Joaquin Niemann put in a win. Winner for you this year, so you get put up on the board first here in February between the two of
Thank
us.
You.
How does it feel to know that my guy Morikawa put on one hell of a chase, but Niemann just was able to hold on for this wire-to-wire victory? He just phenomenal. It really helps when you open with 263s. It really
does. Right, seriously. Yeah, I checked the leaderboard Thursday afternoon and saw him all by himself with a 3-shot lead. I was like, okay. I just literally threw all my other bets to the side. I was like, this is a Joaquin Niemann week. Like, this is it. This is the week. It's going to happen here if it's going to happen. And nonetheless, he did go wire to wire. You're right. We've been tailing this guy for a while, Mike. I've been talking about him for the better part of 2 or 3 years now. It's funny. I did take a little bit of time, and I tried to find the episode where I said, you know, I just got to be here for the week that Joaquin Niemann wins a big one. I'm going to regret it if I'm not here. Thank God I was. I got him at 60-1. And I hope everyone else was following on Twitter at Course of Life 1 is where I put out weekly picks on Wednesday evening. Yours came close with Colin Morikawa chasing, but Niemann just never let up. Rock steady on the weekend. Got it done and won by a couple.
Yeah, it really seemed like Joaquin Niemann was playing a completely different course out there than everybody else, because for a while there he had 5-6 stroke lead. It really was like, and Colin Morikawa did put on one hell of a run on Sunday to get himself into position, and it still just wasn't enough. I mean, Joaquin Niemann did bogey 14 and 15 to kind of make it seem like maybe it was possible, but Really, and this Morikawa was a race for second.
Morikawa was dunking wedges everywhere, too. He had two hole outs on Sunday. I think he had another one earlier in the week. So he was doing everything in his power to keep himself in contention. But you said it. Those back-to-back 63s set the tone for the weekend. Everyone else was playing catch-up. No one got to him. Shout out to Joaquin Niemann for getting it done. Again, follow our picks on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1, and you're at MWRINC. See if we can keep this train rolling into the next week.
That's right. Let's talk about Tiger Woods, because it's his tournament. So there was a lot of talk about Tiger. And of course, he sat down and talked to Jim Nance. And what did he tell you? What did he tell Jim Nance, Alex, that you heard that makes you think that you're right, that he's coming back this year?
Oh, it was, I wanted to stuff it in your and Jeremy Schilling's face so bad, because Jim Nance was asking all the right questions, all the questions I would have asked. He was pressing so hard for a date on a return timetable for Tiger, and Tiger finally had to tell him, like, hey, easy, Jim, like, you're going a little hard right now in this interview. He was pressing for, you're going to be there Tuesday at the Masters, right? For the Champions Center? Okay. You're going to play Wednesday at the par three, right? You're going to play Wednesday, right? Yeah. And he wouldn't let up. But no, he did not officially give the return date. He led Tiger into a statement saying that he was going to play golf in 2022. And Tiger said, yeah, I'm going to play golf in 2022. If it's going to be on the PGA Tour, I don't know yet. So that was the defining moment, I thought, of that booth visit on Saturday with Jim Nance. But nonetheless, it was further encouragement that he is making a return to the PGA Tour. Unfortunately, we really just cannot put a timeline on it. You could tell he was dying to, but he just wouldn't do it this past weekend.
Yeah, you know, typical Tiger being Tiger, maybe we could say, just not committing to anything. That's just how Tiger is. I still don't think we're going to see him on the PGA Tour playing competitively in 2022. And I will stick to that until I am dead in my grave.
I like the Jeff Ritter estimate from last week's episode. St. Andrews, the most walkable course, maybe the entire year, flat course that he loves, that he has a lot of history on. Flat course again, flat course, like got to be a flat course where he makes his return. So that's my optimistic thought, but Tiger not willing to even go there. So we'll just see what happens in the weeks ahead. It's official though. You can wipe the Tiger return at Augusta dreams officially away. We had done that already, but now it's 100% certain. It's going to be a little bit longer for the return of the big cat.
Let's talk about Sunday and what happened Sunday, other than Joaquin Niemann winning at Riviera. And this was all the other news that came out on Sunday. Dustin Johnson came out and said, I'm committed to the PGA Tour. Bryson DeChambeau came out and said, I guess I'm committed to the PGA Tour.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, during the week, we got the news that Phil Mickelson paid money to make sure the Saudi Golf League at least would have some sort of potential light at the end of the tunnel so that he could get the PGA Tour to open up their wallets and give him even more of their money that he has already taken loads of, because he's a greedy mofo. And I'm trying to formulate the right question here. How messed up is this? How messed up is Phil Mickelson, who was a direct beneficiary of pots and media deals getting bigger because of someone he kept losing to, Tiger Woods?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
How messed up is it that he's like sitting here at the end of his career, having done things that, you know, I don't even think Tiger will do, and winning a major in his 50s? How messed up is it that Phil Mickelson just can't keep his mouth shut and can't keep trying to line his pockets?
Yeah, there were just certain parts of that piece where he divulged to Alan Shipnuck of the Fire Pit Collective that he should have just kept a little bit closer to the vest and should have left those out. Phil, I understand that there may be grievances that you have with the PGA Tour and how they operate and how they spread their money around. But one thing that you can't do is you can't openly say that you were using this other tour completely for leverage just to screw over the PGA. Essentially, what happened here is basically Phil went out on a ledge by potentially joining the Saudi Golf League, and he's now out on the edge of the mountain. and he's about to jump without a parachute, and everyone else is looking around. They realize that they don't have a parachute either, and they've quickly backed off of the edge of the cliff. And all of a sudden, Phil Mickelson feels very on an island right now, as a lot of the world's best who he suspected, like DJ and Bryson, might go along with them, are now shedding allegiance to the PGA Tour again. It makes you wonder where Phil sits right now. I feel like this is a little bit of a situation where Mike, he's going to come back to the PGA Tour for his next start, and he's going to kind of have his tail tucked between his legs a little bit. This is a little bit of an embarrassing one for Phil at this age, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that he's going to show back up and tour in his all black and his sunglasses, chewing his CBD gum and drinking his coffee, and
like
he's
going
to say something cocky about, yeah, but I won a major this year, so you know, whatever. So and he won the PIP, so you know, whatever. So
right, but yeah, PGA Tour, they're the one with the obnoxious grief. They handed him $10 million. No question.
You know the difference here though, because I'm trying to almost make a connection between Phil and Greg Norman, that you know Norman certainly wanted to have this extra tour out there. He thinks it'd be good for the game of golf as a whole.
I think Phil is that holistically, that general football I get. Yeah.
And Phil is certainly drinking that Kool-Aid, maybe to a certain extent, though I think his motives are different. He thinks another tour is good because it means he can get more money. I think to a certain extent, Greg Norman thinks another tour is just good for the game of golf.
He actually does want a world golf tour. He wants a tour that is truly worldwide, that stretches to every continent. The six where they're playing golf, shout out Antarctica. He really wants a worldwide golf tour, and that really was the impetus for the creation of it. Now, the part where the words Trump and Saudi Arabian golf money got squandered in the last few years, that's the part where things started to get sketchy. But nonetheless, the intentions were correct from Greg Norman. I don't really know if what Phil's trying to do aligns quite with those intentions, though.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because Phil was saying that the Saudis are some scary mofos. And that's right, Phil. I don't think I would be publicly saying when I'm trying to do business with the Saudis that they are that scary, because you're just opening yourself up to whatever the Saudis are going to do to you.
Very telling article and moment right there. People are speculating, like, maybe was this the kind of blunder that set this windfall with DJ and Bryson and guys who we really thought were going to vacate, change their minds and go back to allegiance full time with the PGA Tour. We'll see what comes of it in the next few weeks. But like I said at the top, like, a little bit of crumbling here in the Saudi golf empire. There was so much heat on this a week or two ago, but I'm wondering where this goes from here. I'm still kind of, my other domino that we're going to wait on, which we'll hear of in the next coming weeks, Mike, is these European players that haven't quite said too much, but have expressed interest. I'm talking about the Justin Rose, Lee Westwood portion of the world, maybe Adam Scott, the Australians, expressed interest in the schedule. So we'll see what's to come of that squadron. But in terms of the top American players, they have shown exactly where their allegiances are.
It's going to be interesting. I have to say, this also just cements the fact that if we don't do another Course of Life book club pick before then, the next one will be in May when Phil, the rip-roaring unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar by Alan Shipnuck, comes out. This will be on the book club list. So go out and pre-order it now, because I think
We're going to get some juicy stuff in there. From what I understand, that book is not authorized or even condoned by Phil as well, too, which means it's going to be all the more better. So yeah, we're tuned in for that one.
We are indeed. Let's go south to Florida. Let's talk about another just perennial player who is always fantastic and good and just doesn't seem to understand that he reaches an age when you're not supposed to be good anymore. And that's Bernard Langer.
Insane, man. The GOAT of the Champions Tour. He did it again down there in Naples at Tiburon. Really nice course there in Southwest Florida. And the 64-year-old still crushing it. I think it was pretty much a wire-to-wire victory. He was there up around the top of the leaderboard all weekend. And just so resilient. He is just a model of consistency. And I love watching him operate. Mike, just insane stats. He's now at 43 wins on the Champions Tour, the 15-over circuit, and 11 wins after turning 60. The guy just doesn't turn it off. I just love him. He's the ultimate Iron Man.
It's fantastic. He's a lot of fun to watch on tour.
Just literally set your watch to 2 or 3 wins a year from Bernard Langer. It won't matter how old he is. This guy's going to do it forever. He really is.
German efficiency.
Exactly. He's the BMW of the Champions Tour.
Mm, Well, BMWs don't run that great. Let's be honest.
Don't get them fixed. As long as you won't get them fixed, they're fine.
Yeah. Let's talk about something a little closer to home, at least for you. Last week, we talked about our rounds with the D3 app and how I am undefeated in said golf betting app, where you can play your friends no matter where they are for real hard currency. Alex, you got to do another round with it.
Yeah, I got to play against Tom, the guy who created the app, and it was a good little match. I did come out on the winning end, so I finally got on the board. I'm now 1-1 in my D3 golf app matches. The real story, though, Mike, was the end of the round, and you and I have been in the scenario too many times when we play. It's the chasing the sun storyline. Well, when you're playing 18 holes, I was delayed for over an hour because of a frost delay in the morning. I had an afternoon tea time. So as soon as I tee off, I'm already wondering if I'm even going to finish or not. Of course, we're pushing things the last few rounds. On my Instagram at Course of Life Alex, you can see a story in which I was frantically driving from the 17th green to the 18th tee and basically played the last hole in darkness. You know how the story goes, Mike.
We did this plenty of times in college. We did.
You know, playing the last hole in the dark. Of course, I need to make a par to shoot 79. So like real milestone golf round, as always, to be in the 70s. I hit a drive, which I think is perfect, but I don't see it go out. So I'm just assuming it's in the fairway. I take out the flashlight on my phone. I'm just shining it everywhere from one side of the fairway to the other. I can't find this ball for the life of me. So I'm an honest man, Mike. If nothing, I dropped. I took the penalty shot and I made my five and shot an 80. So no, I did not get to share the epic story of a par in the dark shoot 79, but I did get the win on the D3 app. It was fun to wager with Tom. I encourage everyone else to hop on there as well. So that was the story of my most recent.
You should get a glow in the dark golf ball. I'm sure Volvic has a glow in the dark golf ball that you can get.
Yeah, I was playing with the yellow for most of the round too. Yeah. And honestly, it was so dark. We were pressing our luck. Once we got about three or four holes out, I was like, I can already see the writings on the wall. I'm going to make some frantic par. I'm going to need 79. I need a par, so we shoot 79. This is all going to come undone because it's going to be pitch black. And that's exactly what happened. But I'm a grown man. The rules of golf apply. I took the five. Nonetheless, I got the win. So everyone check out the D3 app if you want to challenge me to a future match next time I'm out there on the course.
I appreciate your honesty, Alex, and that, of course, is part of the first T: honesty, integrity, sportsmanship, respect, confidence, responsibility, perseverance, courtesy, and judgment.
Love that.
Honesty, I appreciate it. I do. Let's talk about the Honda Classic, which is where the PGA Tour heads next. A lot of the guys are taking a week off after the Genesis. There's some other tournament coming up in another week or so that I think they're getting ready for. I don't know what it is. Something else down there in Florida.
Yeah, it's Florida Swing. So we got Bay Hill coming up. We got the little thing called the Players' Championship in a few weeks. TPC Sawgrass action. So that time of the year. It's all palm trees now in the PGA Tour.
So what do we think with this field out here? Tommy Fleetwood is in the field. Daniel Berger is in the field. Cameron Young, co-runner-up from the Genesis, will be here as well. What are we thinking? Who's the favorite here?
Might be a decent trail, actually. I got to check out how Fleetwood did last week. He's a name to consider. You know what? This could be a week for a guy out of nowhere, maybe. You know, it'd be funny to see if you get odds on a Ricky Fowler top 10 bet if he's in the field, because I think he's a guy that, though he really hasn't had any form in a while, I saw some things at Waste Management that tell me that he could be due for a decent performance, so maybe a top 10 bet there. But nonetheless, I'll throw money on about five or six guys. Again, on Twitter, we're looking to keep this momentum rolling. Cameron Young could be part of the card, that's for sure. But the full list of picks will be at Course of Life 1 on Twitter by Wednesday evening. So best of luck out there.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. The Olympics are over. We won't continue to bore people with that and the whole Russian fiasco, because that's just a crock that I don't really want to get into in this podcast. Instead, I started watching a new show just the other day on Amazon based on a book that then became a movie, but now is a TV show. And that is Reacher.
I was about to say, was this Jack Reacher or something like that?
Jack Reacher, yes. Based on the books by Lee Child, Tom Cruise played Reacher in the movie.
Got it.
And now we get, I have no problem saying this whatsoever, a fine specimen of a man in Alan Ritchson playing Reacher. And I think women watching this will really appreciate just how fit he is, because he makes other men, even really fit men, look weak by comparison.
Who is this guy? Alan Richardson, you said?
Alan Richson. R-I-T-C-H-S-O-N.
Let's see what this... Oh, my.
He has his shirt off a lot in the show.
You said that. No. This man is a specimen. I'm comfortable in saying that. Wow.
Yeah. He is quite fit, to say the least. And that is... You know,
that's
he
makes Henry Kessinger. The audience thought that you were that fit until just now. You just broke.
No, down. But I mean, if you put this guy versus next to Henry Cavill, I actually think let Alan here is gonna be better. Actually,
love that.
But two episodes in, it's got a good mix of humor. It's good fight scenes in it. It's kind of a detective story that we're seeing here. A lot of intrigue, a lot of things going on in back alleys and stuff like that. So it's on Amazon Prime. So Reacher is what I'm watching right now.
Love that. Nice. Cool. I'll do a quick shout out to a friend of the show who we remember having on recently, Johnny Dowers. Sure. Remember the actor who I met in Los Angeles at the Mammoth Media Institute?
Yeah.
So Johnny's been in a lot of things, as we documented. You can check out that interview in our archives from about a month or two ago. But exciting stuff, Mike. We're going to be tuned in this weekend, this Friday. Big screen, digital, on-demand, streaming, release, all the way. Johnny Dowers is in a new movie called Gasoline Alley. It stars Bruce Willis. It stars Luke Wilson. That's right. I'm talking about The Godfather from old school. That Luke Wilson. And many others. Johnny Dowers is in the movie. A little behind the scenes for you, Mike. You want a little behind the scenes from the actor himself?
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So big time action thriller, classic Bruce Willis doing crazy things in the movie. So all you need to know about Johnny's character is he plays a truly shady dude named Erasmus. Okay. This is direct from the horse's mouth. Johnny told me this. He moved to Hollywood to be a screenwriter, but winds up adapting graphic porn novels into porn film scripts for the bad guys in this film. He winds up connecting the hero played by Devon Sawa with the bad guy played by Bruce Willis. Okay? So it's a Hollywood murder mystery with human trafficking and cartel angles, like edgy your seat type of stuff right here, with our friend Johnny Dowers, coming out this Friday, available everywhere. I'm definitely going to be tuned into that one.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
Lots to work with there. So I'm excited. Gasoline Alley. Gasoline Alley is the name of it. Check it out. Streaming, theaters, the whole works. And look for Johnny. And send us your pictures if you see Johnny in action, because I'm sure going to be tuned in to see his lines as well.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we're still talking about your time at the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, because you literally just took people that walked past you, pinned them to the ground, and stuck a microphone in their face.
Yes, there were several conversations to be had in all sorts of different directions from all walks of life. This one proved it too. Wanted to show this to our audience for just a little bit of a conversation from left field. Lots of business networking opportunities, and it was neat to connect with Peter Ashley just through the grapevine and all the connections I made at the show. Very neat conversation about business, technology, workforces, just kind of everything going on in the world in 2022.
We'll get into that conversation in just a moment. But first, let's talk about the Volvic golf ball. Alex, you were using this ball when you almost shot a 79, right?
I was, and it was great. One of the great things about playing winter golf in Texas, especially like within when you're within a week of a freeze, is that every drive goes a million miles. So I felt like a pro. I was hitting wedges into every par four all day, which is not the norm for me. And the XTC soft was absolutely flying, exactly the way I intended. And listen, it's a bright ball. It will glow in the dark up to a certain point. We can't guarantee a level of glow, but we can guarantee it's easy to find. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it also makes it easier to find when you have a ball that does what you want, so you don't have to, you know, look in the rough as often. But if you do have to look in the rough, it's bright and it's easy to find. And that's why I love it, because I can find it when I'm in the rough or in the trees or in the pine straw. So head on over to Volvic's website. That's Volvic course of life.com. You can check out all of their brightly colored golf balls, where they're putting all their money into their ball and not into big PGA Tour players or Saudi Golf League players or whatever they may or may not be. Instead, they put it right back into their ball. So again, head on over to Volvic.com and you can get yourself performance in color. Volvic has a ball for every swing. Volvic.com.
Next up on the tee here, Course of Life live at the PGA Show. It's good to make new connections here. That's exactly what this trade show is about. I'm glad I could connect with our next guest. It's Peter Ashley joining us from Kava Mobile, here to tell us a little bit about what they have going on and what they're doing here at the show. Peter, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks very much, Alex. Nice to meet you and form new connections as well.
Absolutely. Glad to hop on. I'm intrigued by kind of what Kava is doing specifically for the employee experience. That's something that has changed a lot the last couple of years, not just in golf and sports, but just in everyone's world. So first, I'm just curious, what's kind of your professional background and how did you get to Kava with Pacer team as well?
Sure. I was pretty early at PayPal and one of the first 100 employees there, and then did a few lesser known tech startups after that, helped launch a tech incubator, 500 startups, if you're familiar with that. And then I have done a couple of things around business. Kava was co-founded by George Stavros, who's the founder and CEO of Pacesetter Technology, and also a good friend of mine from business school by the name of Jim Phillip. They had heard from a lot of the general managers at the clubs where Pacesetter is embedded, and then also from a lot of the executives who are members of these clubs, that as much as Pacesetter is able to get this extraordinary member experience through their mobile application, could Pacesetter do that same type of thing for the employee experience? And so about a year ago, they duplicated the Pacesetter code and had some product and engineering folks tweak it and make it more appropriate for the business environment. So I came in and took that product, and just as basic business strategy, we're looking at different verticals where we can play. We're starting with the layup. So, for instance, there was one of the members of the Vaccaro Club, where the Pacesetter app is embedded. He owns and runs a company called MB2, which I'm sure you never would have heard of, but it's a dental support organization, and they help dentists who may just be straight out of dental school and know that practice very well, but don't necessarily know business. So they help them find a location, build their practice, do local practice marketing, things that they need to do to get their practice off the ground, everything from buying chairs and gloves to getting new patients. And so this guy loved the Pacesetter app, and he was very much involved in influencing how we crafted it for business. So they have about 400 dental practices that they work with. And I'll pull my phone out of my breast pocket here, and I know that your audience can't see this, but I'm pulling up the MB2 dental app now, and it's got a pretty visual home screen where some of the things that they do are bring these dentists together quarterly, and once a year they will do a big retreat. This one was to Cabo, where they hired the Luchaderos that you can see there. The wrestling
ring. Well, who wouldn't want to be part of a company that gives that experience to their employees, right?
Well, that is fun. And that's exactly our point, where what our mission is really helping a company like MB2 extend their mission, vision, and values out to the entire workforce, which, as you were suggesting, in the last 2 years, so much of the workforce has become remote. And so you don't have the natural water cooler conversations that facilitate culture. And instead, you need to be proactive about pushing that culture out to your employees. How do you do that? There really wasn't a playbook 2 years ago. There have been a lot of consulting companies that have been formed around that. We already had this application that worked pretty well for taking the culture of a membership club and further pushing that out to their members.
Right.
So we were able to take that same recipe and template and apply it to the business world.
Yeah, it definitely kind of helps ease the idea for these people. And there's people from all walks of life that are starting businesses and ventures, but they're not necessarily trained on being a boss or a manager and understanding what it's like to manage that workload and those employees.
Exactly.
So how does Kava make that easier for someone who's just kind of bright-eyed and has an idea and a company, but they don't have much else?
Yeah, so we can work on all levels. What we're seeing is that we are best for companies that have been around for a while. They have a management team, but the management team hasn't necessarily they have a culture, but they are struggling to permeate that culture throughout the organization.
Right.
And we can give them the tools to make it easier for them to do that. And so another application that I'll show you is a company that is out of the construction space, a company that's nearly 1,000 employees out of New Jersey called Torcon. The work that they do is all focused around their mission. So it's a construction company. The projects that they do are hospitals, they're at universities, they've done a cyclotron. These are all projects that to the company are very meaningful. And what's very important to them is that to the community in which they're doing this work, it's going to be meaningful. But that's not necessarily the kind of thing that you'd understand from reading their website or showing up for an interview. So we helped Torcon build, again, there's a pretty visual homepage where they're showing some of the projects that they're doing right now. And they can change that home screen on a pretty regular basis to highlight the newer, more interesting projects that are going on. And then with Torcon, one of the things that they needed to do was recruiting. And they knew that the best recruits are going to come from their best employees. And their best employees had formerly needed to fill out a form, send it to the right person in HR, or find that person in the hallway somewhere. Now we make it really simple for an employee who might be out at a bar on a Friday night, is talking with somebody who's also in the construction industry and loves what they're hearing about Torcon. Well, that employee can just pull up their phone and show them about some history of Torcon, and then they can invite them to join the company, learn more about the company. That friend will get a version of the application that's different from the Torcon employee's version, but it's focused on educating somebody that may be interested in construction but knows little about Torcon. And then it also gets into specifics such as where our offices are, what the dress code is, what the hours of operation are. And now once that prospective employee has the app on the phone, HR has a communication link to them where they can do direct communications. If it's something that's really important, it can show up on the top of their screen, such as your appointment starts in 10 minutes. Or if they just want to say, hey, we did some photographs of a project that we completed a year ago, we'd love you to see those.
Yeah.
That's not as important, so they can find that in another area.
No, it's that instant networking connection, because usually that started with a big conversation saying, yeah, I'll go talk to somebody. And then just, we don't really know where that goes, but you're able to really make that happen very fast and help grow workforces. Let's talk about how the last couple of years have kind of changed that communication, that culture. Obviously, a lot of things remote, and there's this little feeling that when things move remote, we're connected, but we still don't feel as communal as we used to. How does Kava kind of keep that community feeling within employees as well?
There are many different ways that we do it. First, as you said, pretty much every company is dealing with a remote workforce that they had no idea before. So we have features on the application that help access information that may be a little tougher to access when you're outside of the office. So we basically recreated the company intranet on the phone, but it's also a company intranet that we recreate, and we do it in a way that's very similar to other navigation that the user is already going to be familiar with on the phone. So they already know how to navigate this app before they've ever opened it. You talked about communication. So there are a lot of different communication tools. I think most would agree that email is a used and abused vehicle for communication, and that, you know, 90% of the emails that I'm getting are something that, you know, are
not
are
for me or deleted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or at least, you know, I might read it on a flight, but I just don't have time to do it now. So we make it very easy for an employee to start a communication channel, and it may be a channel that's created for 10 people that are working on a specific project, or it may be 5 people that like to get together at this bar on Thursday evenings, or 4 who like to play tennis every other weekend. And it's really simple for the employee to create and manage that channel. And then there are other vehicles that HR or the company can use. We also make it super simple and very casual for the department head or the CEO to take a video and just say, hey, I wanted to congratulate these folks for what they accomplished last month, and talk about our big focus for the coming month and what we hope we're going to achieve this year. It's a, you know, casual conversation, not on mic ours, and the CEO can take it, excuse me, right from the phone in their office and car.
That's awesome. You know, the really cool thing that it does is it makes employees feel like this is legit, like they're wanted, like there's actually really some significance to what I'm doing, and sometimes that contact can get lost in translation. So I appreciate what Kava is offering. So you're here with Kava, which is going through Pace Center Technology, and you're here with this golf audience now at the PGA Show. I'm curious, what have been your impressions on the show and networking specifically the business of golf?
So the show's pretty impressive. This is the first time I've been to the show, so
same. Yeah,
my understanding is it's half to two thirds of the exhibitors.
Boy, this is half, man.
Yeah,
it's
huge. Yeah, but you know, it's a great group. I've made some interesting connections that I, you know, had no expectation for, and the people that have made it here are obviously, you know, very motivated to be here. At Kava, we're not necessarily talking to the GMs that are coming through here, but.
Right.
I look around at all these companies that are exhibiting, and every one of them is a prospect for Kava. So anytime I can have those conversations, I embrace it.
That's awesome. What's the state of your golf game? Do you play much at all? Or when's the last time you hit a course?
I'm kind of horrific. So kind of horrific. But I'm in a company where we did the talk about extending the culture. We had a golf outing and fundraiser a couple of months ago that I was in town for, and I was definitely the dead weight in my foursome. But you know, fortunately, we had Courtney and Posty and a guy by the name of Charles to bring down the scores and bring up the level.
But, yeah, if you get the right scramble teammates, it all washes out, right? I love that. Very cool. Peter, thank you so much for connecting with us. The final question we love to ask our guests, which I'm sure you can relate to. You may not be great on the course, but I know we all enjoy the 19th hole, right? So when you get done after a long day, whether it's work or play on the golf course, what's like your go-to meal and drink that you love to order after a hard day's work?
Well, it's usually dependent upon the ambient temperature. So if this is in the middle of the summer, I'm probably looking for a margarita and some nachos. This time of year, granted, you're going to find me less on the course this time of year, but a glass of red wine and a nice steak is also pretty appealing.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with red meat and red wine. I love that. And thank you for the Texas shout out with the nachos and the marg. Always appreciate it. Peter, Ashley, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life.
Alex, great to meet there. You. Thank you very much.
That interview was brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. You'll be the talk of your foursome, and it's a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a phone caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your phone caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Peter. Alex, is this it? Was this the last conversation we're going to hear from your time at the PGA show? Is this it?
Honestly, I probably could have gotten 10 more, but man, it makes me realize how hard I was hustling in 48 hours there. But yes, it appears like that may be one of our final conversations coming from the PGA show week. I want to thank everyone else who I got to connect with, from Mae Brennan to Dr. Byrne, all sorts of people we'll definitely have on the pod again. But yes, lots of connections, as you could see, from all walks of life made at the PGA show.
And if you liked what we did there at the PGA show and want us to do this again, we need your support. And really, all I'm asking for, I'm not asking for money, but if you want to give us money, I will take all of your money, literally all of it. Even the stuff you think I don't know you have, I will take. All I'm actually asking for is you to hit that subscribe button and like button on the podcast app that you're using right now, just to show us your support that way. That's all I want from you. It's all I want. But in the meantime, let's talk about football. Yes, football season is over, but I just think it's really interesting to find out where my former head coach, Joe Judge, former head coach of the worst in the NFL, I don't care what the record actually was, worst in the NFL, New York Football Giants. He's now a coach for your New England Patriots, right? Is he taking over for Belichick? Belichick's going to retire, and he's going to take over for Belichick, right?
I mean, not quite that evil, but hey, you might be saying something in the future that's going to happen. Scarily. This headline absolutely blew my mind. So one thing, if people don't already understand this about Bill Belichick, the legendary coach, is if he's nothing, he's not probably one of the cheapest people in the entire existence of the planet. He's the most well-paid NFL coach, but he gives absolutely nothing to his assistants. So he's got it in his head this upcoming season that he may not actually have like a literal defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator. Why? Oh, because he doesn't want to pay them what a coordinator would make in today's NFL. So he just hires a million assistants and calls them consultants and whatnot. You'll never believe this, but he's decided not only to take in Joe Judge after that horrible run in New York, but apparently we've decided that we're going to have Joe Judge coach the quarterbacks. So after all the wonderful work that Joe Judge just did with Daniel Jones and the Giants offense, he's now going to impart that wisdom with a giant question mark to Mac Jones and the Patriots offense. I got to get your thoughts on this one. That was an all-time head scratcher headline that came out this week.
Alex, I'm so excited to have you join me in the bottoms of the National Football League, in the swamp, as we revel in our inadequacies together.
Yeah, this
I'm
is a
so excited.
Infiltration. I feel like you're doing this to me. Like, what? I did not ask for this. I do not want Joe Judge coaching Mac Jones. I don't want him imparting anything on my precious rookie quarterback who looks so great. So I'm scared to see if this is indeed how this role shakes out in Foxborough, what sort of impact he has, but I just hope it's minimal. So God bless me.
We'll see what happens. We'll check in with you as the season actually kicks off, whenever that is. What, next week? I think the NFL doesn't really have an off season anymore. They play nonstop.
Very soon. It never ends.
But let's talk a little basketball. We haven't talked basketball in a while, and it was the NBA All-Star weekend this weekend. And let me just tell you how much I care. I care so much that I don't.
I want to flash you back to a moment when maybe you did care, Mike. It was a while ago.
Patrick Ewing played when I cared.
Let's go back to the dorm rooms in 05 and 06.
Yeah. When the Celtics were good. Yeah, you know, when they came out of nothing. Well, that was a little after that.
The NBA All-Star Weekend has changed so much from the time when you and I would watch together, from now where we are in our lives now. And the NBA All-Star Saturday night used to be so amazing. You and I watched dunk contests of the past where 5'9" Nate Robinson beat the field and won the dunk contest. You remember Dwight Howard putting on the Superman cape and jumping on a 12-foot hoop.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Blake Griffin dunking over a Kia, like he actually jumped over a car.
Yes, yes, I do remember that. These are
the memories of the dunk contest, and they are all gone. The dunk contest is completely dead. Mike, you would have been ashamed to watch what happened on Saturday night. There were zero perfect scores. There was no thought put in the dunks. You couldn't have recognized anyone who was in the dunk contest. And it was just a very depressing night. All the legends were there to watch an absolute fart of a dunk competition. And that's my official eulogy. I don't know, Mike. You know how heavy I am into NBA All-Star Weekend. But that one had me questioning things. So I think I'm burying the dunk contest for the immediate future.
Was it like watching a mid-major college program and the kids told by their head coach are not allowed to dunk during warmups, but they want to dunk? So they're like half dunking, but they're not really dunking. Was it like that? You know exactly what I'm talking about, because this happened at Quinnipiac every year.
It was like that. And then on top of that, none of these guys could hit the dunk on their first try or second try or third try or fourth try or fifth try. So if it takes these guys seven or eight tries to even do the dunk, it really loses its luster, wouldn't you say? So that was another error that happened with Saturday night. Overall, just a monstrosity and a atrocity of a dunk contest on Saturday
night. What I will say is the night is always darkest just before the dawn. So
okay. I appreciate the optimism. You know, maybe my turnkey thought is we need to just go PGA Tour, just go PIP with it, and we need to just start shelving out money for the top players and just force them to be in the dunk contest.
Because these guys don't get enough money as it is.
Yeah, exactly. They don't get enough as it is for their year-to-year contracts. You know, the top players are only making between 30 and 40 million a year, so we got to throw them another couple million to make my All-Star Saturday night a little bit more entertaining. If that doesn't happen, there's really no future for the dunk contest.
30, 40 million a year. Jeez, we really were not gifted at birth. We really weren't. Yep. It's really sad. Yep. Let's hashtag always in with the food.
Yes, sure. Brought to you by Toasty Bites, makers of Toasty Snacks, Super Bites, and those. I love the Toasty Pop Snacks as well, too. Just very convenient, on-the-go, healthy snacks. Check out toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20. I'll lead off because I went somewhere that I haven't been to in over a decade, Mike. A chain restaurant for the ages that we all know and love. Talking about the Cheesecake Factory. How long has it been for you since you last went to the Cheesecake?
It's been several years, but I think that if I, to put it into a measure that people may be able to understand, I think I've been gone from Cheesecake Factory long enough to be able to read the entire menu once.
Yes, that's right. Great, great update. COVID has not taken any cuts to the Cheesecake Factory menu. That is one menu that has stayed as large as it is. So shout out to the Cheesecake.
I should also specify, I'm talking about just the cheesecake portion of the menu, not the food portion of the menu.
Still three pages devoted to cheesecake. You'll be happy to know. Yeah. And the other 15 were devoted to all the food items they have. It's wonderful array of amazing entrees from every part of the globe imaginable. We had some amazing Buffalo Blast, which I posted on Instagram at @alwaysinwithfoodpod. My wife had an amazing Louisiana pasta dish. I had just one of those gigantic juicy burgers with all the toppings in it. You can't go wrong there. And we're still munching on the cheesecake to this moment as I talk with you right now. Wife went with the Oreo and I went with the chocolate caramel, aka the Snickers cheesecake. What cheesecake would you usually go with at the factory?
Well, you know, I think I really only ever went to Cheesecake Factory maybe two or three times in my off time, because the only one that was near me, as you will know, was the one in Burlington, Massachusetts.
Shout out to Burlington Mall.
It was at least an hour drive to get down there, and then, you know, an hour wait to get in. So just not somewhere I ever really went. That said, as a cheesecake fan in general, I am a New York City purist. So I want just good old fashioned cheesecake with a graham cracker crust, and I want either cherries or strawberries on top.
Yep, there were both, and they had a raspberry option as well too. So the variety is still flowing aplenty at Cheesecake Factory. It was good to make the return trip. What was on your food docket this past week?
So I had a pretty busy cooking weekend in general this weekend. We ended up delaying our Valentine's evening dinner.
Oh, the humanity.
A week because, I know. Well, we just got too busy. And, you know, we do not feel bound by the limitations that the Hallmark Channel has put upon us and told us when to celebrate these holidays in which we show our love for each other. So instead, we delayed it and showed our love for each other on that night. So I made focaccia. It's the first time I've made focaccia.
Which, been too long, you know, for me on focaccia. How did it go? How was the flavor? How was the rye? What's the review?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was perfectly crispy and oily and delicious in every possible way. And it went great with the almost inch and a half thick ribeye steak that I got to go with it. Like, for the first time ever, I did a reverse sear method on. I've never done a reverse sear, so that was fantastic as well. And nice. We wrapped it all up with brownie sundaes. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, gluttony at its finest, right there. Yeah, what a meal for a king and queen that is, right there.
Yeah, I know. That's what we are. We are royalty, and if anyone says otherwise, I will behead them.
Yep, that's right. And royalty not bound by the constraints of the Valentine's Day calendar as well, too.
Exactly. Just know that. Exactly.
Love it. That was hashtag always end with food. And a wrap on another great edition of The Course of Life. Thank you for everyone tuning in. Please be sure to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.